perfect. Okay. Welcome to the Geared Up Podcast. This is a bro-cast, which means we've got the homies in the house with us. My name is Charlie Ungemach. With me, I've got...
Bryce Scusi.
And...
Connor Herter.
And back on the mic again, we've got...
Cooper Knoll.
This is, what, your third time
It is
now?
My third, yes.
Third time on a podcast. Well, welcome back, brother. Any updates on life or anything?
Not really, just same old, same old. Work, yeah. School, sleep.
Work, school, sleep. Where are you working?
Traditional concrete, make concrete light poles. It's fascinating.
Nobody's Pace crushed bills. A leg or anything yet this year?
Not this year, so better than last year.
How about you, fellas? It's been a while since we've done a broadcast. You got anything new going on?
I got a haircut not too long ago.
And it looks good, too.
Thank you. Thank you.
I got nothing.
You got nothing.
Nothing new. Same as Cooper.
So Bryce and I, anybody that listened to the last episode knows Bryce and I went out east on – or what? Actually, Cooper, you were with us too. You just weren't on the last episode of the podcast. But three of us went out west for a choir tour. You went home, right?
I went back home for Easter. Yeah.
How was that?
It was really nice. The girlfriend flew out, and we did Easter at church and with the family. It was just good to see everybody again and get caught up with things at home, make plans for the upcoming summer, that kind of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Bryce, highlights from choir tour?
Ooh, I would say going and revisiting my old church. It was really fun to have my dad fly out and preach there again, and it was the 25th anniversary for that, the church that my dad started down in Las Vegas, Nevada. So if anyone's listening from Las Vegas, hello, and shout out to you.
Awesome. How about you, Coop?
I would have to say I was just sitting there on some slot machines. I didn't do too hot, but I watched Bryce win $500, so that was pretty cool.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that. Did you then lose $500?
No. So the first night we got to Reno at the GSR, that night I was up like 150 in blackjack, and I went to bed. And I'm like, this is awesome. The next night, I lost 200 in blackjack. And as I was going up to my room to cry, I put $20 in a slot machine, and that's when I won the $500.
That's amazing. That's awesome. That's how you keep it coming back, yep. Right?
Yeah. Everyone always quits before they win big.
Yeah, that's how the saying goes.
Just keep trying. You'll make it big eventually.
Yep.
Yep. Awesome. Cool. All right, let's start with thank yous and shout-outs. What do we got?
I'll go first. I'm going to send out a thank you to my parents because during Easter break, I had to have a little bit of car maintenance done, and they drove all the way down to the Chicago area to switch cars with me because it had taken longer than expected to get the repairs done, so I drove their vehicle back, and then we switched vehicles, so they asked me to say thank you to them on the podcast because they are regular
listeners.
Wait,
they drove back here?
They drove down towards Chicago, so like the Friday after we came back from Easter break, I drove their vehicle down towards Chicago, and they drove from Michigan towards Chicago. We met halfway.
I live with you, man. How did I not hear about any of this?
I thought I told you about it. I was gone Friday. I was gone Friday afternoon for like 5 hours.
Yeah, you were gone Friday.
You don't listen to me. That's the thing is I'm here.
Oh, man. I was feeling so good after reading the chapter about like...
about loving your brother.
Now it's right back down in the gutter.
Oh. In one ear.
Well, what happened to your car?
It just had to have a bunch of like... basically, like, suspension, tires, like, all that stuff. So it wasn't a cheap bill, but it got done, and the mechanic said it should last me another 100,000 miles.
Nice.
So hopefully through the rest of my time here, maybe even through Vicar year, hopefully.
Awesome.
We'll see.
Cool. And you still didn't get your trunk fixed?
Nope. The mechanic said that was something I had to go to an authorized dealership to get done.
And really?
I'm not going to pay that money to have that done for a trunk. I can deal with the ratchet strap on it.
What's wrong with your trunk?
It just won't latch. The latching mechanism is broken, so it just pops open. I just hold it down with a ratchet strap right now.
Oh, I could rig something in there.
I mean, you we'll can take a look at it if you want.
Well,
to.
Anybody can just pop open a ratchet strap right now. So, what is your license plate number?
Yeah, exactly.
Where do you park it?
It's the one with the neon green ratchet strap on it. There's nothing interesting in there.
All right, awesome. So, shout out to the Herders. Cool, Bryce. What you got?
I'm gonna give a shout out, or I guess I'll give a thank you to my grandfather. He Let's see. I painted his shed and his treehouse, and in return, he gave me his boat. So
that's a good deal.
It was very awesome. I mean, it's been sitting for a while, and he wasn't really using it anymore. And I was like, "Hey, Grandpa, what can I do to get the boat?" He goes, "Paint my shed." I said, "Okay." So thank you, Grandpa.
That's awesome. What kind of boat?
It's just a 14-foot John boat.
Okay.
With a trolling motor and
it's like better than the dock.
I think it's an 8-horse motor on it. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice 14-footer. Mm-hmm. That's not bad. That's not bad at all.
It'll get the job done.
You can take it out in the harbor on a calm day.
Yeah.
maybe not this 14-footer.
Maybe not Michigan at all. Yeah. No.
All right, Coop, what you got?
Connor took mine, kind of, but shout out to my parents because it was both of their birthdays. Shout out Connor's parents for what they did, but also shout out my parents because it was both their birthdays within the last 2 weeks. So
awesome.
Very thankful for them. So maybe it's a thank you, but yeah.
Thank you for having birthdays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, I'm going to shout out Jay Wall and Cam Schrader. Jeremiah and Cam, they've both been on a podcast a bunch of times if you don't know them personally, but they are both at Michigan Lutheran Seminary right now, working really hard at Jeremiah's a tutor. Cam is he'll be our classmate next year back here at the seminary. He's a recruiter, and they're both working real hard at encouraging young men to be pastors. So shout out to them. I'm going to see Jay Wells is going to be in town tonight, so we're going to go have a beer together. That'll be fun. But, yeah, shout out to those dudes for encouraging young men to go into ministry. The more young people we have around the seminary, the more passionate I get about encouraging people to actually come to the seminary.
Shout out MLS, my alma mater.
Yeah.
No, we're shouting out MLS.
We're going to shout out the dudes at MLS.
We're shouting out MLS.
All right.
Sing the song.
No, please.
We're also going to shout out Paul Kufall from Juneau, Wisconsin. Thank you, Paul, for your cup of coffee donation. We call it a cup of coffee donation because for the price of a cup of coffee, you can help support the ministry we're doing with young men. If you'd like to help support or fund the work we do here at Gird Up, go to www.com, select Buy Us a Cup of Coffee in the main menu, and make your donation there. We'll also make sure we have a link to the website down in the show notes below. Our manly quote of the week this week is a Frederick William Robertson quote. I'll be honest, no idea who the guy is. Probably could have Googled it. Oh, well. But what he said was, Bryce, you going to Google it?
Yep.
All right. Frederick William Robertson. He said, "It is not the situation which makes the man, but the man who makes the situation." Again, it is not the situation which makes the man, but the man who makes the situation. What do you think, Coop?
I kind of thought, like, a guy who truly has integrity, you know, he's not, like, you know, blown by the wind when a situation comes. You can kind of predict what he's going to do because he's got those principles that he lives by, and he lives by them to such a degree where when something happens that's not in the normal, he'll still keep following those and just kind of be the man that he always is.
So what you're saying is a guy who keeps his cool in every situation kind of keeps every situation cool almost, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
All right.
Yeah, that's not good.
Frederick was a English theologian.
Oh.
So he was a pastor in the 19th century.
Nice.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Probably wrong about baptism, but cool.
Probably, yeah.
He died, he was 46 years old when he died.
Oh, my.
Ooh, that's a short life. It's like 16 years away for us.
Does it say where he was, where he...
He was born in London and died in, or the UK, yeah, so.
Yeah. Sort of just... He's probably a humanist.
In the UK.
Was he like a professor somewhere or something like that?
I didn't see anything about professor, it just says clergy. So
I wonder if you like wrote a book or something, or maybe a famous sermon or something like that. Just kind of curious, like how we ended up with the quote.
There's a lot of his articles and sermons published.
Oh, cool!
So
very cool.
Probably from an article or something.
Awesome.
This quote was.
All right, Connor.
There we go.
What do you think?
That's the second time today, Cooper. I'm telling you, we're just getting mixed up here.
Mm-hmm. You guys look so much alike.
That's what I was thinking.
My big bushy beard.
Yeah. I thought of this quote from two different angles, both the negative and the positive. So the positive angle is when you look around yourself and you say, I got a good wife, I got a good family, my financial situation's well. Obviously, as Christians, we say, thank God for these gifts that I have. but thank God for giving me the ability to do these. So you say, I helped, by God's help, get myself in this situation. On the negative side of that, if your life is falling apart, if nothing seems to be stable anymore, you can probably trace that back to some poor decisions you've made in your life that have brought you to this negative situation. So I looked at it from both angles.
That's the my favorite part of this is that you get like four. A lot of times we get multiple viewpoints. I didn't think about either of the things that you two just talked about, but they're right on the money. You got anything to add?
Yeah, the first place my mind went to was rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. And it's if you're on top of the world, where's your mindset? It should be on God. Most of the times it's on. Look what I did. But when we're at our lowest, it should be rejoice in the Lord always. But what is it? We blame God. But to be the man who makes the situation is rejoicing in the Lord in the good times, in the bad times, and always have your minds, hearts and minds set on the things above. And that's where my mind went with this quote.
Yeah, I dig that. I was kind of in that zone a little bit, but I didn't take the biblical perspective. I was more just thinking like practical advice, like whatever you make the situation is what the situation is going to be. So from a negative aspect, like Connor was talking about, let a letdown be an opportunity, right? A lot of times when things fall apart, it's disappointing. It is a letdown, but then also usually there's another opportunity. So, you know, you're a high schooler whose girlfriend breaks up with you. Well, what does that really mean? Now you have an opportunity to go find somebody that's not going to leave you, right? Like, think of, I know it's hard to think about that in the moment, but that's the reality of the situation. You lose a job, well, what a great opportunity to go find another one, and perhaps even one that you'll enjoy more or one that long-term is going to be better, so forth, right? Maybe it's just get to spend more time with my kids for a couple of months while I'm looking. You know, but you can let any letdown can be then an opportunity. There's a lady that Seth Hackbarth and I stayed with on choir tour, who her husband died, had died within the last year. And that was one of the things that she talked about. She's always, they own a bunch of rental properties. And she was talking about the idea that she now is like all in on being a landlord. And she's going to do it. She's like 90 years old. She loves being a landlady. She like does all the work and she's still learning stuff, and she's all excited about all these projects she's doing. Of course she misses her husband, right? Of course she would rather that he's still around, but she still now she's got more time on her hands. She let it be an opportunity to learn some things, right? I also thought about one of my favorite catchphrases is one riot, one ranger. I've talked about it on the podcast 100 times, right? But the legend goes, there's a big riot in a small Texas town, and the sheriff can't handle it himself, so he calls in the Texas Rangers. And one single Texas Ranger comes riding into town, and all the men of the town go out to meet him, and they go, where are the rest of the Rangers? There's just one of you? And he goes, how many riots do you have? And they said, we only have one riot. And he looks at him, and he goes, one riot, one ranger. And he rides into town, and he takes care of business, and the riot's over, right? But the idea of the right man for the job is you only need one man, right? And depending on how you look at the situation, really dictates how you're going to handle the situation to begin with. Any thoughts on that?
I just, when you talked about that 90-year-old lady that likes being a landlord, I couldn't help but picture just this little old grandma walking up and knocking on the door asking for, I don't know why, asking like for her money because they're short on renters. It just put a weird image in my head.
Well, this lady, she was telling us that she and her husband bought the land like up on this hill above San Diego, looking over the San Diego Bay. They bought the land when it was a cattle ranch, and everybody told them they were crazy. They bought the land for $2,300 in 1971. When they built their house in 2008, so they owned the land this whole time, never built a house on it. In 2008, when they built the house, the land itself, before they even built on it, was worth $2 million. And she goes, so that was a good investment. It's like, you bet it was. You bet it was. So, yeah. Great old lady. Awesome old lady. Yeah. Any more thoughts on the quote of the week?
No.
All right. I would just sum it up with, then it's not the situation itself, but your attitude about it that defines the situation. So Bryce talked about it from a spiritual perspective. Connor kind of talked about it from a practical perspective, and Cooper did too. So cool. I like it. That's a good one. I say we keep that one. That's a good manly quote.
That's a good one.
All right. Moving on to Bros with Bibles then. Our booked for this week. Not the Bible, I guess. We'll get to the Bible later. Men on Fire by Stephen. What? It's not an afterthought. We're just getting to it later. So, Men on Fire by Stephen Mansfield. Make sure we put a link to the book down in the show notes below if you want to read it along with us. We're on chapter 5, The Fire of Love. Actually, it was I think you could probably combine this chapter with the chapter before on friendship because they were very close related, and I'm a little confused as to why he separated the two of them, honestly. But I think it was a very useful chapter. He himself said it's the shortest but the hardest hitting, and I think he might be right, just the way, like the style of writing and the language that he used. But I'll let you guys jump in here. I guess first, what did he have to say about men and love? And what do you think about it?
Well, I think his analogy right off the bat at the beginning of the chapter where he talks about building the fire and how you can't just leave a fire unattended and expect it to continue burning. And I thought that set a great idea of where this entire chapter was going to go, that love isn't something that is just going to naturally feed off itself and continue on. It takes regular tending and regular attendance in order for it to burn and to be successful.
And what he didn't talk about, and it's a great analogy, what he didn't talk about also is, the situations change, too. Like, the environment changes.
Oh,
if you're trying to keep a fire going for a long time, it might start raining. It might get warm out. The fire dies down. Like, there's all kinds of different things that can change, and you still need to keep tending the fire through that. I thought it was a great analogy for relationships.
Yeah. I guess going along with that, love is an active thing. Like, he talked about all those guys with their wives who... they never did anything special together, and it just kind of fizzled out. It's like there is some action involved with it. I remember I was working with a guy. He just asked me, is love a feeling or an action? It's like, well, that story's less cool when you found out the guy was Nathan Golish. But, I said, well, it's got to be an action because, love demonstrates itself in a whole lot of ways, and one way isn't to just not do anything, you know? Love is driven, I think, as he pointed out in the chapter, by just doing the little things even.
I'm pretty sure there's a couple of his ex-girlfriend's dads that listen to this podcast. So.
They're going to like that, too. Well, if we look at, to go off of Cooper's point, if we look at it from a biblical perspective, when we look at Jesus, the perfect example of love, Christ had a feeling of love for the people. And he enacted that feeling of love. Not only did he express his love to people, but he also actively loved people by curing the sick, by curing the demon-possessed, by, fulfilling their bodily needs and ultimately fulfilling their spiritual need by being their savior.
I just think that that's why he made it into two different chapters, too. Because when we had the fire, is that what it, the fire of friendship, I don't know why I blanked on that, the fire of friendship in the last chapter, the fire of love really dives into and gets a lot more intimate to what that looks like, what that feels like, and love should be within every relationship you have to some extent, and it's the driving force of those friendships and of even more relationships that are deeper than just friendship.
And now that you say that, I think you hit the nail on the head. There's a different level of intimacy here, right? Friendships are kind of those peripheral relationships that are valuable and important. You need to maintain them. But I think in this chapter, he's really honing in on those tight, intimate friendships. So those close guy friends. I like to think about it as your basketball team, right? You can maintain really close relationships with four or five guys, right? And then obviously your wife as well is a heavy emphasis in this chapter. He kind of makes the case... I don't know if he really does it explicitly, but subtly he makes the case that men are bad at loving each other. Do you guys find that to be true? Do you think that's true?
Well, I don't think
that in general.
I don't think we say it enough. I mean, I love you guys. I don't think I've ever told you that. But, it's it's almost got this negative stereotype where if you love your bros, you're soft or something like that. I don't know. I've gotten that vibe from people. Not that that's necessarily true.
I wonder if that's changing in the upcoming generation, because I feel like the upcoming generation in general is a lot more willing to express their feelings of genuine companionship that they have with each other. And I think our generations, the two generations represent two generations represented here.
We're not even two generations. We're 6 years older than these guys. Come on.
Yeah, but we're millennials, and they're you guys would be Gen Z.
We're Gen Z.
We're the iGen. We only care about ourselves.
Are you? Yeah. You're still a millennial?
Yeah.
95?
I think 94.
So you are, yeah.
Yeah, I think 98 is the cutoff or something like that. I don't remember. But the upcoming generation is a lot more willing to express that to each other. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, or if it stems from a good thing or a bad thing, but yeah.
I think it's that word emotion, right? The feeling.
Yeah, it could be that.
That's the key, is it might be more willing to say it and feel it, but there's a big difference between feeling love in air quotes, right?
Yeah.
And the action of love, like Cooper was talking about. And I don't really know how to differentiate the two. I think they go hand in hand. But there comes a point where you stop feeling love for somebody and you still act it out in your behavior, right? Ooh. Like, I always think about kids in a classroom, just because I was a teacher for so long. Kids in a classroom, there comes a point where you don't really like the kids. And actually, I've had kids say that to me. Like, Mr. U, I don't like you right now, but I love you, right? And I don't know if somebody said that on a TV show or something, because it feels like kids are saying that more and more nowadays. But anyway, that idea of at some point the feelings stop, and yet you do still continue the action of love. And I think maybe, I don't know, just my, and you can disagree with me if you want, but my observation seems to be they're more willing to do the feeling part and talk about their feelings, but are they willing to do the work on the back end to actually back it up?
Yeah, well, and you know,
I was just going to say, when it comes to love, I think that actions are way more important than just the feeling it and saying it. Because, like, with your guys' older generation, and with us, you and me, Cooper, too.
I hate that so much.
Not
even a decade older than you.
Like, we probably don't say it as much, but we show it in how we act towards each other. We help each other out. We do things for each other. Yeah, we're not sitting there all the time going, oh, I love you. But it's by what we're doing, how we're acting, how we're treating each other. Whereas the younger generation is all saying it, but then they don't really act on it.
And the way I would back that up is look at their behaviors, right? So all these like affirming behaviors, and I'm not even necessarily talking about like sexuality and stuff, although that's part of it. But even just like bad behavior and bad practice and things that don't lead to a happy, healthy life, we keep affirming these things. These younger folks keep affirming. It's our generation too. Keep affirming these things. What real love would call that out and say that's not healthy. That's not good. You shouldn't be doing that. It's not good for you. It's not good for you long term. It's definitely not good for your spiritual life. To not say that is not love. And what the world's narrative is, love just affirms. Love just loves whatever, right? Love is the whole spiel, right?
Yeah.
But that's not love. Love is being able to look you in the eye and tell you the truth when you need to be able to hear it.
I guess I'll revise my previous statement to say this. The younger generation is more willing to be accepting and to express love from an emotional standpoint. The older generations were more willing to enact love. They might not have said, like, I love you, or they might not have expressed that kind of feeling, but they were more than willing to go out and swing a hammer with you on Saturday morning to help you repair a roof or something like that. Like, that's what that generation was great at. They were great at helping each other and expressing love through actual action.
That's what the handshake said, man. That's
yeah. That was I love you.
On our wedding night, we shook hands. So. All right. So let's talk. Unless anybody else has anything to add on that end of things. Let's talk practical then. Let's start with the bros, and then we'll work towards women. Right? And I don't know if any of us are experts on loving a woman, but
it's been a year and a half. It's been a year and a half for me.
what does that mean?
Nothing was implied in that besides love for a woman.
Yeah, like having a relationship.
I didn't say making love. I just said love.
No, that's not. Okay. Well, now you said it.
Yeah.
Cat's out of the bag. But I said that wasn't what I was saying, so it doesn't count as saying.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Oh, jeez.
That'll fly.
Okay. Anyway, we'll start with the bros. How can we be better at loving the bros?
I feel like with me and my friends, like, it's not a problem of action. Like, you know, maybe we're old souls. But, like, we do stuff with each other all the time out of love. But it's just, like, affirming each other. It's not necessarily saying I love you, but just like, hey, you did a really good job at that. Or I really like your outfit. That one's not as important. No, or, like, I really think what something. You've been doing is great. And, like, that's so nice to hear. And I think maybe the way we've been raised is most of us come from, like, a staunch Lutheran background where it's just kind of mind your own business. But that's a really good thing to say and, you know, lift someone up in that way.
But I would add to that, too. Like, it's not just we're saying these things just to say them either.
For sure.
We're saying them out of genuine care and love, per se. Because we do love each other and we do care about each other and we reaffirm those things and we say those things. We give those compliments. We help each other out because it's all genuine, and that's what genuine love is.
Yeah. Well, and even to add to that, just saying, like, I'm glad you're here, right? And not making it weird. Just like somebody walks in, hey, man, glad you're here. You know, just that. Like, that'll fill your bucket for sure.
Yeah, I think the four of us are a little spoiled because of the situation we find ourselves here at the seminary. I think there is genuine love here. I mean, there are times when we butt heads. There are times when some of the stuff that happens on campus can rub people the wrong way one way or another. But in general, I sense a general air of genuine love and appreciation in both action and emotion for each other. I mean, last night's a good example. I overheard Charlie restocking the refrigerator and misinterpreted it as him throwing books around. I thought out of frustration, I poked my head out of my room. I was like, hey, everything okay out here? Like, I think that's just genuine.
Yeah. And it genuinely meant a lot that you did. I mean, there wasn't anything going on, but it meant a lot that you would have popped out.
And we do that stuff regularly. Like the time you complimented me on my brown outfit, my brown suit outfit that I had going on, and I just really took that to heart and it meant it. And now I wear it every other day. but when you're in the real world and you don't have this kind of, you know, tribe of brothers that are surrounding you that have a similar goal and similar moral outlook on life, it can be difficult to find that same sense of love. But if you're just working at a job, every job that you have, you probably have somebody that you goof around with, that you talk with, that, you know, anything like that. You can start expressing that love in both just by checking in, say, hey, how are things going at home? And that might become a little invasive to some people. That might come across as a little invasive to some people, but for some people that's going to mean a lot. It's going to mean a lot to them.
Well, and you can even soften that too. You might not start with, you know, how are things going at home, man?
how's ball your heart, and chain?
Well, you're like, but how's the old ball and chain actually might, I mean, granted, it's probably not super respectful to women, but it also, I mean, it's a lot. It's a socially acceptable question to ask, right? Or like, you're married, right? How are things going? Mm-hmm. You know? And he might be taken aback, but I guarantee it means the world that you're asking it. Even if he doesn't answer, right? Just don't be weird. The Professor Christie rule, right? Just don't be weird.
Don't
make it weird.
No, seriously, just don't.
Right? But that's a real thing, too. Like, just don't be odd. Be sincere and don't be odd. You can have those conversations. This is something I really did struggle with before coming back to MLC and then obviously the seminary. And it is one of the things that has meant the most to me about our journey together here is that, like, those genuine relationships. It is something I did struggle with big time when I was in Milwaukee. And part of that was just the community that I was serving. There weren't a lot of men my age who were living the same lifestyle I was living. Mm-hmm. And that did prove to be a difficult thing. But I was able to find, like, good relationships with older men. It's one of the reasons why I started the podcast. I haven't been shy about that, is, you know, meeting more people too. There are ways you can be creative and go find those relationships, right? Yep. One of the guys, Zach Coplin, who's been on the show a couple of times. He was at the seminary with us for a while. He's taking a break. But he just joined a different church recently for that reason. Just switched Wells congregations to a place that had a lot more young men, for the saying, look, I'm looking for some more friends. I want to make some relationships. Mm-hmm. I'm not at the seminary anymore. It's something I miss. And so I'm intentionally going to go seek out a place where I can build those relationships. And he's doing it. So like that kind of, like you can find solutions to that. Another great place is just the gym, right? The gym is the easiest place in the world to make friends if you smile every once in a while, you know? Everybody likes to be complimented in the gym. Everybody likes to make, like, everybody wants the gym to be welcoming and friendly. So, I mean, you should be working out anyway. Go make friends at the gym. Like, there's all kinds of solutions to the problem of not having those friends. And once you have some friends, then you can start making some deeper ones, too. Cool. Last words on loving the bros? All right. What about girls? What about girls? They are scary. Yeah.
Coop, are you in a relationship? I forgot.
I am, yeah.
How long have you guys been together?
2 years this Saturday.
Oh, no kidding.
How do you keep the fire burning?
I really liked what he said. I think I kind of unintentionally do it, but what he said about keeping a higher vision. It's like, if you look at someone at their worst, like if you look at me at your worst, you would never love me. But if you just imagine like the things that you love about a person and like the things I love about my girlfriend, it's like, you know, I could just gush on for hours and hours about how awesome she is.
Yes, you can. Yes, he can.
Good for you, man.
I really think that's an important thing to keep in mind because, like, you can so easily become one thing. You start looking down. Another thing happens. It's just a downward slide. But if you keep looking up, that just keeps it, you know, so much more fresh.
Yeah. So, what kind of, like, do you have a he was talking about ritual a little bit. Do you have a ritual at all that you're willing to share?
It's been tough because we've been long distance because she's been at MLC. Yeah. I don't know. Like, we call a lot, and then that's not really anything crazy. But I don't think it has to be anything crazy necessarily. Just kind of get into a groove, and so it doesn't become like a have-to thing. It's like, oh, I want to do this, but also it's ingrained within me that I have to do this because this is what's going to be best for both of us. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because Michelle and I just hit a year and a half on Monday, this past Monday.
Congratulations.
And it's easy when it's early in a relationship because it's that honeymoon stage, and there's a couple of guys at the seminary right now going through that honeymoon stage. And I think
it's so funny to
watch. It is because it's such like puppy dog love, and it's amazing, and we're happy for them, obviously. But when the rubber actually starts to hit the road and you're at 6 months and then you find out that
you're not just smiling 24 hours a day anymore. Yep,
like, well, she gets pimples. She farted a couple of times in front of me. Like, you get these little things that you have a beautified image in your head, and all of a sudden things change a little bit. And those aren't bad things. Those become more endearing as the time goes on.
Pimples and farts become endearing
because it shows you that they're actually a person and they're not this. What does he refer to as Guinevere? That's what he calls her in the book, is Guinevere.
Yeah.
But there will always you're always going to treat her like that Guinevere, that idealized woman, and you'll be able to move past those hard moments. And to go back to the analogy of the campfire, when the storm actually comes, when the rain comes and that fire burns, dies down a little bit, you can rely on the fuel of past memories. The one guy had an example of keeping photos of his wife and that kind of stuff, and how that helped him even through the hard times. Because as you get older, your body changes, you gain weight, whatever happens, you go through financial difficulty, whatever it's going to be, it doesn't matter, because the relationship is about who that individual is and not what the outward circumstances are.
That's something, and you don't have to wait till you're married to start that either. It's something I've actually done a few times. Is a first date goes really well, you both express that you want to have a second date, and I'll say, hey, let's take a quick selfie. And take a quick selfie, and sometimes it goes on to a relationship, sometimes it doesn't. But if it does, you've got that memory, and then you just keep taking like a selfie, a date-ish, mm-hmm. was the rule, right? And then as you get, you know, a few months into the relationship, you've got that you can enjoy. And then, I don't know, for me personally, if it doesn't work out, because it hasn't yet, then it is something also that you can, like,
delete.
Well, it is something you can delete. But no, it helps me on the back end. Also, like, kind of process a little bit too of like, oh, this wasn't, because sometimes when you get broken up with or the breakup happens, it's all bitter, right? So it gives you that reminder of it's not super bitter, but we're talking about making the fire burn for a nice long time. Yeah. So, yeah, no, that it doesn't, like, and it can be different for everybody. Like, you can find your own thing. I remember like a couple Christmases ago, I met an older gentleman who said his wife had a battle with cancer for like 8 years, and when she was first diagnosed, they promised each other that they were going to dance together every night before bed, and it was she wasn't supposed to live for 8 years, but mm-hmm. for 8 years then, they danced with each other every evening before they went to bed, and he basically said, like, why on earth weren't we doing that earlier? Right. Like, our marriage wasn't bad before that, but my goodness, did it get better once we started, like, intentionally every day. We weren't talking. We weren't, you know, like, all we were doing, when some days it was like 10 seconds, you know, a quick little spin, and off we go to bed. Like, it wasn't a big deal. We didn't make, some nights we made a big deal of it. Most nights we didn't. It was just something we did every night, and that ritual changed all the other aspects of our marriage, which, I don't know, I just thought that was an interesting thing. But he said the first thing after he says, I don't know why we didn't do that earlier. And he wasn't like, he wasn't pontificating. He was just making the observation, you know, now that I say that, we probably should have started doing that earlier. Right. So, yeah.
Now, I am no expert on long-term relationships, but I think that one thing about love for a woman is knowing that there are going to be struggles and hard times, and knowing that you are going to persevere through them because your love is so great for each other. And your love for her and her love for you, it's going to help you guys pull through that situation, come out stronger than you were before. And life is completely filled with ups and downs. And it's the same thing with relationships. No relationship, no marriage is going to be perfect. But when you love each other and you love God, God's going to bless you and make you guys stronger.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I thought one thing kind of absent from the chapter was just the mention of the Bible or Christ at all.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Yeah, and like the Bible is just a perfect handbook. Like if you could follow everything the Bible said about marriage, your marriage would be perfect. And obviously that's not the case, but I don't think we need to look too far to find some perfect guidelines that we have laid out for us from God. So that's probably the first place you should look.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, if you want to read along with us, like I said, we'll make sure we have a link down in the show notes below. If you're going to buy this book, make sure you use the link down in the show notes, because if you buy the book off Amazon using those links, those are affiliate links, so we'll get a little bit of cash back for that. You'll help support the podcast. So we hope that you do read along with us. It's been a good book, worthwhile reading. It's not the first time I've read it. Just enjoy it. It's a good one. Can't hold on to every single word he says, but read it with discretion. It's definitely a useful book. I'm enjoying reading it.
I'm so sorry. There was one part in the book that I thought we should have talked about.
Do it.
That was where he talked about the section on forgiveness, men of forgiveness, being a man of forgiveness. And I thought that was a good point because I've met a lot of men and I'm related to a man who has allowed a bitter situation in his life to poison his entire life. Like years of his life have been poisoned because he's not willing to let something go. He's not willing to forgive. So the importance of one, from a social standpoint, if you take the Bible out of it completely, just being willing to forgive somebody is going to make your day easier, and it's going to make your entire life easier. But obviously, as Christians, the being told to forgive isn't something that you should feel that you need to do, but you should want to do because of the gift we have of forgiveness in Christ. So again, just I thought that was a really good section he had about how it can poison an entire man's life, and don't let it because it's not worth it.
Yeah, that idea of bitterness just taking over and kind of being the rule for life. And you're right, we didn't really talk about that. Like the backside of that was pretty much any man who's miserable. Again, I don't plan these out.
It's the situation.
I don't plan these out this way. It just always ends up working out that way. But it's not the situation that makes the man.
Yeah.
It's the man that makes the situation, right? If you're a man who's descending into bitterness, recognize that's a you problem, right? That's something you have control of. It's something you can fix. You might not be able to fix the relationship. You might not be able to fix the circumstances, but you can control how you behave and how you feel about it, right? So don't let bitter situations turn you bitter.
You can plug the book again if you want.
Stephen Mansfield's Men on Fire. Links down in the show notes below. Cool. All right, moving on to obscure Christian trivia. We've got one church history, two church history, one from the Old Testament, and I think you guys are going to nail this one probably. One from, don't guess yet. One from pop culture. So, yeah, the one from pop culture, I think everybody on earth has heard about. But sorry, you guys got to get one right eventually. Okay, the rules: don't say the answer right away. I'll give you a chance to say what letter you think. They're all multiple choice. What letter you think is the correct one? Here we go. Question number one. For what offense was Galileo Galilei pursued by the Inquisition? For what offense? Was it A, asserting that Jesus could not be both a spiritual and physical being at the same time? Was it B, declaring that the earth is round and hell cannot be a physical place which is beneath our feet? Is it C, stating that the sun, not the earth, is the center of the solar system? Or D, wearing pants? A, Jesus cannot be both spiritual and physical. B, the earth is round, so hell can't be a physical place beneath our feet. C, the sun, not the earth, is the center of the solar system. D, wearing pants. Say your answer on three. One, two, three.
C.
It is C.
Yes.
It is C. Did you say D?
Oh, it was so ridiculous. I thought that had to be it.
C it is. He declared that the sun is, in fact, he said the center of the universe. Obviously not the center of the universe. It is the center of the solar system, though. The Earth does rotate around the sun. All right. So we got a two-way tie right now. Here we go. Question number two. According to church tradition, to what people was the Apostle Thomas the first missionary? According to church tradition, to what people was the Apostle Thomas the first missionary? A, the Serbians, B, the Siberians, C, the Arabians, or D, the Indians, meaning from India. A, Serbians, B, Siberians, C, Arabians, or D, Indians. Say your answer on three. One, two, three.
D. A.
D it is. Oh. D it is.
And they say the Chinese too.
Did they?
Really?
Really. Yeah, they even call themselves, like in their own language, like the Church of Thomas. Yeah. Who was so it? When Marco Polo like started and people started going back and forth, missionaries went to, so like when they built the Silk Road and everything, missionaries went to India and then they were Christians there, and the Christians there were more Orthodox than the Christians being sent by Rome. Yeah.
Which apostle went to Ethiopia? Is that?
Oh man, yeah. Who's on the? Well, no, he doesn't go to Ethiopia. He just meets an Ethiopian eunuch on the way.
Who's in Africa?
That's that Mark Antony?
No.
Okay, let's answer that question first. Stop it. You are ridiculous. He actually considered it.
Mark. Okay. Did we know Mark's last name?
Okay, first question. Who is?
And I'm right. I'm winning this thing today, too.
Okay, it was Philip and Ethiopian eunuch. But Thomas supposedly went to India. Yeah.
And Matthew went to Ethiopia.
All right. Mark Antony.
I was like, Mark Antony.
That was Cleopatra's fantastic. Husband.
All right, so yeah, Connor's got two. Cooper has one. Bryce has one. All right. Two questions to go. Here we go. In Leviticus chapter 11, all winged insects which go on all fours are declared unclean unless... So winged insects which go on all fours are declared unclean unless... A, they have jointed legs above their feet. B, they lay eggs. C, they have split wings. Or D, they have eyes on the side instead of the top of their heads. So A, jointed legs above their feet. B, they lay eggs. C, split wings. Or D, eyes on the side of their heads. Say your answer on three. One, two, three.
A. C.
A it is. Oh, Connor is shooting, batting 1,000. Almost said shooting 1,000. Connor's batting 1,000 today. All right. So, like a grasshopper, they have jointed legs above their feet. Yeah.
thought it was that or the split wings.
I thought it was the split wings.
Yeah, we went over that in Genesis like 2 months ago.
Did we?
No, we didn't.
Yeah, we did. We were talking about clean and unclean animals.
He didn't mention insects. No, we didn't.
I think I have it written down. I'll check that.
Yeah, you got to check up on that. Unless I was sleeping, which I don't sleep in class.
Ever.
Ever.
Oh, gosh.
I was your table partner for a whole semester.
Yeah, you were the one sleeping.
Yeah. No.
You just dreamed that he was sleeping while you were sleeping. Yeah. All right. So, no tiebreaker today. Connor's going to win, but you guys could catch up. Well, no, you can't. You guys could close the gap. Here we go.
I could tie him.
You could tie him? You have
two. Hoop could tie him. You have two? I have no chance.
Bryce is out of this. Here we go. The controversial former megachurch pastor Mark Driscoll was forced from the stage at the Stronger Men's Conference last weekend after declaring a spirit of Jezebel had visited the assembly when what happened? So Mark Driscoll, you didn't hear about this?
No, I guess I'm not up on that stuff.
I think I heard about this.
Okay, so no phones.
Stop looking it up, Connor.
Controversial former megachurch pastor Mark Driscoll was forced from the stage at the Stronger Men's Conference last weekend after declaring that a spirit of Jezebel had visited the assembly when what happened? Was it A shirtless male stripper swallowed a sword and climbed an aerial pole to open the conference? Is it B, a woman led the assembly in opening prayer? Is it C, a transgender man was ordained and commissioned as a pastor? Or D, a clear and concise exposition of law and gospel truth was presented by a confessional Lutheran pastor?
No, we know the answer we want to say.
I guess you guys are ruling that one out, huh? So A, shirtless male stripper swallows a sword and climbs an aerial pole. B, a woman led the assembly in opening prayer. C, a transgender man ordained and commissioned. Or D, clear law and gospel exposition by a Lutheran pastor. Say your answer on three. One, two, three.
A
it is.
I read that article.
A it is. Yeah. So Connor wins, first of all. The most bizarre part of you'd think you'd be like, finally, Mark Driscoll did something right.
I heard what happened, right? Yeah.
Okay, but this is worth looking up if you haven't looked it up. This is worth looking up just because it's so bizarre. So Mark Driscoll gets up on stage and says, you know, this guy, you know, took his shirt off the way a woman takes her shirt off. He climbs a pole the way a woman climbs a pole as a stripper, like so on and so forth. And he, you know, lays it out. The spirit of Jezebel has visited this place. So you'd think just knee-jerk reaction, he's probably right, right? But the guy did at one point, like earlier in his life, work as a stripper. Now he's an aerial performer for like a Cirque du Soleil kind of an outfit who performs without a shirt on just generally, which is pretty normal for an acrobat. This pole is also like 30 feet tall. And like it's a normal, they call it a Chinese pole. It's like a normal thing that acrobats use. So he swallows a sword, climbs up the pole. There's music playing in the background, and it's supposed to get guys fired up for the men's conference. So first of all, what does this have to do with encouraging men with the gospel? Absolutely nothing, right? So already off to a bad start. But this guy was on the schedule for months ahead of time. So there's no way Mark Driscoll didn't know that he was going to perform at this event. And later on, you find out that the guy, the pastor who's hosting the whole event, had like a half an hour long conversation with Driscoll at the event before it went on, and Driscoll never said anything about it at all. So you've got Driscoll, who's basically like taking the opportunity to make a name for himself, right? And on the flip side, you've got a men's conference that's just behaving bizarrely. So there's really no winner in this situation at all. It's kind of bad for the Christian church across the board, but it sure makes for interesting content.
Yeah.
And wild stuff.
I actually remember reading this and seeing it on a social media site, and people were attacking the other pastor that called him out for calling out Mark Driscoll about this. And saying that it wasn't his business, like how dare he call out Mark Driscoll for including that community into it. So It's a whole thing. I remember seeing it for the first time. I was like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, he's right to call it out because it is weird and it doesn't serve anybody. But then also the way he did it is clearly all about him having his gotcha moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then the people planning it, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Yeah. Yeah, the not the bee article about it, I think it was my favorite one that I read. And at the bottom, the conclusion was, I'm pretty sure nobody actually talked about Christ all day. I was like, well, it's funny. I wish it wasn't so real. But all right, so Connor wins trivia. It's the first time in a while.
It's been a while.
First time in a while.
I've tied a couple of times, but this is good.
Been studying up on your church trivia, huh?
Yeah, on my...
All right, top three this week. Top three summer jobs and why. Top three summer jobs and why. I'll start with mine. Number three, something where you make tips. So I work as a beer vendor, but like a caddy, a server, a bartender, things like that. Somewhere that, especially if it's like a touristy kind of place, right? Somewhere that you can make tips. Because if you can make tips or you make commission, it kind of puts the money back, or it puts the power back in your hands. Like, so on a bad night, you might not make a ton of money, but if you're good at your job, you're going to make good tips. So, but if you want to be lazy, don't. Yeah. But I mean, any opportunity that you have where you can kind of be in the driver's seat for how much money you make is going to be a good opportunity if you're good at your job. What do you think?
Well, number three is just doing odd jobs. That's not really a job, but like, you know, you go help a guy from church paint a shed, or you help someone move, and
somebody might give you a boat.
And they always, they always pay you well when you do that, because it's like a one-time thing, and they're thankful that you came. You get to hang out with some different people than you normally see, so I always love doing that.
Is Craigslist still a thing, like with the gigs that you can just, is that still going?
What's Craigslist?
So, really?
No, I know.
Okay. Well, you used to be able to go on Craigslist, and there was like a gigs tab, and you could just like click what...
odd jobs.
Yeah, what field you wanted to look at, and you could get jobs that way. Not always the, like, sometimes a little seedy, but most of the time, like, a lot of, I mean, I remember in college, I did a whole bunch of, like, side jobs like that, where just some guy says, we need to tear this, you know, shed down, or, you know, my basement flooded, or whatever, and paying $50 an hour, come help me out. You work for 3 hours and make $150 kind of a thing. Yeah, I don't know if that's still a thing, but.
Should be.
I think there's, I feel like I've heard about another, like other apps where you, like moving companies, where like you sign up for the app and it just lets you know when people are moving and you get paid through the app. So you can look into, like there's a lot of gig-based work opportunities. Cool.
My number three, I did this for a couple of summers, and that was cutting down trees. I think it was just a great physical job. It was hard work. The money was halfway decent, but I mean, if you're looking for a physical job to do over the summer and stay busy, summertime's a great time for cutting down trees.
Yeah, my number three was any job at a golf course.
Ooh.
Because your summer could then be filled with golfing for free, which if you don't play golf, you should start doing it, because it's the one sport you can play your entire life, guaranteed. Well, not guaranteed, but you know what I'm saying. It's a great sport, and money's not bad at depending on the golf course, and you get free golf. Golf is expensive, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of times people when they go golf, it's something that they're choosing to do, right? Mm-hmm. So that maybe won't be. Sometimes in the service industry, people can be kind of awful to you, but I feel like generally at a golf course, you're not doing too bad. Yeah, I kind of went on the same route. I said golf course or lawn service. Mm. I spent a couple of years as a landscaper and like a groundskeeper and stuff. Like if you can get those are good jobs and you work hard and I enjoyed them. But if you can get like more of like a lawn service kind of a job, you don't work quite as hard. But I just love being outside. I personally love cutting grass. Like if you put me on the back of a mower with headphones on, man, I could go all day for months on end. Like, I love that. I never get tired of that. So, I don't know. I love those kinds of jobs. So, like, golf course, lawn care, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
My number two was working at a thrift store. So, I did that for 3 summers. And I found so much awesome stuff that, like, it was totally worth it. Even if I didn't get paid, it was worth it. And it was fun, too. So.
Where?
Goodwill.
Nice. Really? So you didn't get paid to work at Goodwill?
No, I did, but even if I didn't get paid, I still would have done. Yeah. Well, that's not even true, but it was fun. Worked with fun people, and I found so much cool stuff.
Yeah, my number two would probably be like working at an ice cream parlor. I just think that'd be fun. I mean, I feel like it'd be nice. Who doesn't love ice cream? I mean, I just think it'd be a good time.
I don't know. Noel used to work at a Minnesota Ice in New Ulm. Yeah. He said his hands would be sticky for days afterwards. Ooh,
yeah, I can imagine that would be.
Glad I never went there.
It was good ice cream.
Yeah, true.
I have a punch card somewhere.
The fudge from there is really good.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, my number two is any blue-collar job that you can get. I think you have to be 18 to work blue-collar, but right now I'm working at an electrical company for underground utilities. Ooh. And it's hard work, granted, but it's, one, rewarding. Two, you get to see how things work and you get experience with equipment, and it just gives you a great appreciation for all those companies that come out and they fix the lines on the pole or they fix the underground wires so your Wi-Fi works. It's just because normally you see those guys and you're like, ah, they're those workers, the blue collar folk. But when you actually work with them and you see all the things they do, you are very thankful for them. And it's just a great job.
Yeah, it's really easy to be impatient when the power goes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have a little bit more of appreciation for...
that I do.
Were you here when the lights went out for like three days?
Yeah, but thankfully, my mom lives 20 minutes away, so I booked it there so I didn't have to take a freezing cold shower.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, I invited Joel and Seth.
Thanks. Yeah, okay. Thanks for the invite. No, okay. We did all right. Yeah, we did all right.
Cards and dominoes,
yep. All right, my number one, intern in your future field, especially if you're a young person. Just find a way to like work in the field that you're trying to get into. So if if you're studying to be a teacher, go find a job. Like, let people know that you're studying to be a teacher. I'm an education student, want to get into the field. There's all kinds of opportunities to do internships, things like that. Kind of whatever your field is. If you want to be an electrician, they would love to have an apprentice around for the summer. Legal work, all that kind of stuff. Accounting, no matter what you're studying, if you think you might want to do it, and it's a great way to really find out if you actually do want to do it before you're in the field. You kind of get a little bit of a taste for it, right? So you think, maybe I want to do this for my career. Go do it for a couple of months or help out for a couple of months. Get a feel for what it's like.
Yeah, my number one was a delivery driver. So more specifically, I guess for the last like 2.5 summers in the mornings, I deliver like soil, rocks, and sand. And that's just so fun. You get in a huge truck, AC's blasting, it's 90 degrees, but you don't feel a thing. And people are always happy to see you. So, you know, you get tips, and it's a great time.
Nice. Like a big dump truck?
It's not a dump truck. It's a mini dump truck. So it's like an
F-550. F-550, yeah.
So, okay.
With a dump bag, so I just press a button.
Yeah.
So no manual labor involved,
yep,
which is nice.
And you get loaded up by like a front-end loader or something like that.
Yep.
That is a great job. That's a cushy job.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so cushy.
You get to wear boots and look blue collar, but all you really do is drive around all day.
Yeah.
Nice.
Exactly.
My number one, did it for years, for 6 years, summer camp counselor. I think now I would suggest going to actually like a legitimate summer camp that was going to be able to pay you if you want to make money over the summer. But if you're just in it for the experience, as a teenager when I did it, it was fun. Hanging out with other people my own age, hanging out with girls my own age, loved it. As an adult, I loved it because I got to have an impact on kids' lives, and that was more meaningful as I got older, and I actually got to like introduce kids to nature, have them learn survival skills, that kind of stuff, and teach them archery. That was the fun part. So if you're young, it's fun because you get to be with your friends. If you're older, you get to actually have an impact on kids' lives.
And you might get a cool nickname.
You might get a cool nickname.
Like
Rocket.
What?
I'm going to explain that one.
Yep.
That
story.
So we weren't allowed to use our actual names at the summer camp because we weren't allowed to have kids find us on social media and that kind of stuff. like kids from the summer camp, because there's a conflict between an authority figure and whatnot. For some reason, that was the reason that was given to me. So all of us were assigned different names. We had like Jackalope, Sunfish, like all these different summer camp people.
Jackalope?
Yeah, that was a 30-year-old outdoor survivalist guy that slept in a hammock and worked in Hawaii during the winter time on a commune farm or whatever that is. So he lived out in the woods during the summer, and then he went to Hawaii and worked on a commune farm. Fantastic guy. He's going to be at my wedding someday. But my name was Rocket, and I was never given a reason why I was called Rocket, but I'm not fast, so I got nothing. But there's a good portion of people, and one of them actually went to college with us eventually, who still know me as Rocket. So yeah, my name was Rocket.
I gotta call you Rocket more often. Yeah, just for
I have fun. A whole Snapchat group that I'm just referred to as Rocket in.
That's amazing. Kind of awesome. Mm-hmm. Kind of awesome. And
great. I got a tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
My number one is being a lifeguard. I was a lifeguard technically still am certified, but the last 6 years of my life. And it was great because when I started off at 16 being a lifeguard, I was working with a ton of girls that were 16 and also lifeguards. And it was great. I went on many dates because I had that job. It was a great, great way to meet girls. And you're out in the sun and you get to tan. And
good for you.
Yeah. It was and you get to sit in a chair all day.
I would just be pink all the time.
Oh, yeah, sorry. It's my cross that I have to bear that I tan really well.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
But yeah, great job. Lifeguarding is just, and swimming in general. I love swimming now because of it, and it's a great workout. So
sweet. All right. Good luck finding a summer job, fellas. Now you got some suggestions. All right. Jumping into our reading for this week then. Comes from 1 John chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. Beloved, I do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God, for many false prophets have gone out into the world. By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus has come in the flesh is from God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. And every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you heard was coming and now is in the world already. Little children, you are from God and have overcome them, for he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. They are from the world, therefore they speak from the world, and the world listens to them. We are from God. Whoever calls God, whoever knows God, listens to us. Whoever is not from God does not listen to us. By this we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. I got to read these ahead of time.
Yeah.
I got to practice reading them. I always practice before I read for church, because otherwise I'd do that. All right. What do we think?
Go ahead. Please, Bryce.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that first verse gets sort of lost with all the other stuff that's happening later on, but it's really important to know that we are in a day and age where there is a lot of false stuff happening around. There's a lot of stuff that can mislead you. There's a lot of stuff that can lead you down a wrong path. There's a lot of stuff that can drag you down from the truth that you know. And just the importance of holding on to Scripture and testing everything to make sure that it lines up with the truths of Scripture. And I just think that that's a very good encouragement for us, because we have everything that we need to know in Scripture, and Scripture tells us the truth, and when something doesn't line up with that, we are able to say, oh, hey, that's wrong, and I shouldn't listen to that, and you're able to differentiate the truth from the lies.
Yeah, we kind of live in a world where there's no such thing as objective truth, so every TikToker and Instagram influencer and what does Christy say? Insta-snap. Everybody on Insta-snap is a guru on something, right? And you're supposed to just give everybody, you're supposed to give, like, there's no such thing as being like your opinion is no more valid than mine, no matter who you are, right? Mm-hmm. And it just isn't true. It just isn't true that everybody's voice counts the same. It just isn't true. That grates against our American way of thinking, but it just isn't true. There is one truth, there is one objective truth, and there's one way to know what the truth is. And if they confess Jesus, consider it. If they don't confess Jesus, they don't speak the truth.
This is to piggyback off Bryce's point here, but I remember I was like probably 11, and it was when the world was supposed to end according to the Mayan calendar. I saw this huge billboard that had like, it was Christian, and it said basically Jesus is coming on this day, and I was just terrified. And my dad, I still remember him saying, he's like, trust what God says in the Bible. Don't always trust people who try to tell you what's in the Bible. That's always stuck with me a lot. Like, people can say anything they want if they like misuse scripture, but just look at it, take your time, slow down, and really just see what the Bible's communicating, because it is clear.
I remember my dad said something to the effect of, well, the Bible says nobody knows the day or the hour, so I know what moment he's not coming. So whenever they say he's coming, it might be before, it might be after, but it won't be that moment.
Yeah, it wasn't the eclipse. You know?
I would say the second half of verse 4 is probably the one that I took to heart the most. The one that's in you is greater than the one that is in the world. So it's just parroting what everyone else has said here, but again, you will find truth in the Bible, and you will find falsehood in the world. That's it. You look like you wanted more.
I just think to add to that too, for he who is in you, the Holy Spirit lives in us, and he strengthens us and gives us faith. And without that, we would not be able to differentiate any truth. And I think it's so wonderful to look at that and say, I have someone who is able to show me the correct way, and he's always with me, and he's always there showing me the correct way. That was just to add to Connor's point.
Well, I think about somebody like Jordan Peterson, for example, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of what he says is really good stuff. Like, a lot of what he says is really good practical advice. He's a brilliant psychologist, right? But he is not a Christian. He denies that Jesus was the Son of God. He denies the historicity of the Old Testament. Like, he is not a Christian by definition. And so while a lot of what he says is worthwhile and good, if we treat what he says as gospel, we're going to be misled. It puts your faith in danger. It doesn't mean don't read any Jordan Peterson or watch any Jordan Peterson videos. What it does mean is tread carefully, right? Tread carefully.
Or take what he does say about the Bible and then go read the Bible and actually see how it measures up against the Word of God itself.
Yeah, like recently they did, he and, oh, who's the guy that does the conservative guy that does the, oh, shoot, Prager, Dennis Prager. So he's a Jewish scholar and theologian and stuff. His political videos are awesome, but his commentary on the Old Testament, very, very, like, progressively Jewish, right? So you get those two guys and a few others got together, and they did, like, a video series about the Old Testament. A lot of worldly wisdom up there. Zero useful, valuable, biblical truth, right? And they're talking about the Bible. They're talking about the Scriptures. But there is no gospel there whatsoever. There's no saving faith there whatsoever. At best, there's an opportunity to justify yourself. But like Scripture says, if you're going to fulfill the law at any point, you're going to have to fulfill the law at all the point. It's not a I meet Jesus halfway kind of situation. If you want to be justified by the law, you're justified by the law alone. If you want to be justified by Jesus, you're justified by Jesus alone. So just being careful. There's a lot of stuff out there that's labeled as Christian, that's, you know, like borderline, they're talking about Jesus. It doesn't always mean that it's should be taken seriously. Cool. Any last thoughts? Awesome. I'm going to shout out Glenn Nagel as well. He was here at the seminary the other day. He was surprised that I remembered him. Glenn, I could never forget you, man. All right. Gentlemen, thanks for listening to the podcast. Go be the man that God created you to be. We will talk to you next week. On behalf of all those involved in producing, recording, editing, and distributing this episode, thank you for listening to the Gird Up Podcast. If you'd like to contact us with comments, questions, or suggestions, you can reach out to us at any of the links in the description below or on our website. Please consider supporting the work of Gird Up Ministries by donating on Patreon, shopping at our online store, or making a $5 cup of coffee donation at www.girdupministries.com. Those donations help us make more great content just like this for young men just like you. Make sure you like, friend, follow, and subscribe to Gird Up and all of our guests on your social media platforms, and consider leaving a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to the Gird Up podcast so that others can find us and be blessed by our content too. As always, thanks for listening. Now go and be the man that God created you to be. We'll see you next time.